Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this, I'll tell you about my heartache. I'll tell you about my heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
All right, this about sums it the F up. Within my body, I am resurrecting this freaking creaky voice to bring you another radio program tonight on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves, the bumpy Blog Talk Radio airwaves, as I stumble on the air, barely catching the 9 o'clock bell. And, you know, as all the ghosts say,
boozy, boozy, bop, city bop.
In other words, whatever. Whatever. You know, I don't know what, if I shared it last week. I had a little, maybe I did, I don't know. I have amnesia. Talking to myself once a week for 3.5 years and recording it could be called some type of therapy, but it's a show. And I had a tooth pulled. Actually, it wasn't really a tooth. It was a dental investment. It went from a filling to a crown to whatever they, what comes after that? Oh, no. It was a filling. Then they did a root canal. Then they put a crown on it. Then they pulled it. It's like They got me three times for the same tooth. So now, whether I like it or not, I don't have a hole in my head. So here I am dealing with the ramifications of that immune response. So see if I can find something here. Oh, from last week, maybe. Well, I go take care of some business.
Right. Sorry. Actually, Frank, it turns out that was our good friend. That was actually our good friend Dr. Mark that called in.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Oh, good. 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 Yes. The fake doctor. Okay. Yeah. The chiropractor.
8-1, and he just said in the chat room, 8-1 Red Sox here in Game 7. That's
who cares? That's 5 years ago. Ask him when the last time that the Mets won a championship, moron. Moron. Next time, tell me if it's him or not, Mike.
No,
I feel like I got buffaloed here.
No,
you really
didn't.
Do.
Let me tell you, Frank, you kind of actually handled it pretty well. I got to tell you, I think
he's not going to get away with that garbage. He's not going to do it. And like I told him, he wants to meet me in a dark alley anywhere, I'll challenge him. Let him bring his body.
What's
the
old, Burnt Sugar scorecard? Is that a 10-6?
All right, Frank. Easy going here. God damn Yankee fans. I'll get into that later. I'm absolutely fed up with the pompousness. It's part of the theme tonight, though, because we're dealing with this. Maybe it's the season. Maybe it's in the air. I don't know. But anyway, all my picadillos aside, we got to go live. Fox News with the coverage. Let's see if we've got anybody else covering it here at the 9 o'clock hour. That's, here we go. CNN's got it. Let's see if Rachel Maddow. No, Rachel Maddow's in for this. She's interviewing somebody else that's off camera. Let's see.
The 33rd mile, last one brought to
free. Larry King, the Iron Horse of broadcasting. Anybody but my voice right now. The last Chilean miner is out. 33 in, 33 out. Got him done in, I think, a little over 32 hours, or whatever, maybe less. It's pretty amazing. It's over. It is certainly a happy ending. 69 days underground, sucking tuna fish. Unbelievable. There we go. All right, Larry, we'll listen to a little more.
A man who, whether you agree or disagree with him, has certainly stood up for the little man, Michael Moore. Let's listen to a little more of Lewis.
Michael Moore coming on the show.
We're able to get out or not. We. We didn't know what was going on. We couldn't see. How long did it take for the dust to settle? About 3 hours. Then we were able to see really what happened. Then we realized. We tried to start looking for the other miners. You have no idea how all the Chileans shared the anguish, the hope, and the happiness. I think the first 5 days we were sure there was work being done on the mine, but we thought it was going to be difficult. Then, in my experience, I knew it was going to be difficult the way things were. At the beginning, we didn't know where you were. We didn't know if you were dead or alive. Until this arrived, we cried. Emotion that must have been around 6 a.m. And we had a protocol with you. When you were with me, well, thank you, but they forget about the portable. We forgot about the portable. Everybody wanted to hug the hammer. They had several little papers and notes. I'm hungry. And then send a message to the family. I believe the ones that had to arrive arrived. It was so the emotion underground and up here. We will never forget it. The anguish and the anxiety and then the happiness when the last one came out, the captain, the boss. We were all so happy.
All right, there you go. Get a little flavor. I mean, boy, this dude, Luis Azura, I can't pronounce his name. See if they got it on the other screen here. Hannity, he must be doing a real objective report on this.
In under 22 hours, with 22 great
hours.
Efficiency, incredible skill, all 33 miners are out.
That's right.
We've covered a lot of stories over the years, and this is one of the best results I've seen in all the years I've been covering stories.
Same here, Sean. Nothing really to compare, you know. So often when we work into the midnight hours and come in the early hours, it is to report on tragedy. And to have this before us is really quite astounding. There were so many things that could go wrong. They had backup.
All right, joining us now to maybe relieve my weary throat, we have a voice from the wilderness, maybe to comment on the events in Chile. Go ahead, voice.
Is it me?
It is you. You're the only one there.
How you doing there, my brother Wolf?
I am struggling.
I know. Yeah, you were speaking. You actually had the Don Corleone voice this morning. I swear to God.
That's right, cats.
What's going on? I don't understand the situation. He was like, I'm making an offer. You can't go. You know,
we don't get involved in drugs. It's not our business.
What's the matter with you? Sarantino or whatever. It's like, holy God. Talk about Italian. It's like, holy God.
So, what is your political and what is your historical take on the miners emerging from the hole in the ground?
Well, in Chile, right?
Will it spark tuna sales? I mean, these guys survived on tuna for 69 days.
Chile is, it's one of those beautiful countries that was actually usurped by the Spanish army, you know, because the Portuguese, we're coming down from Columbus Day. And of course, I love the way the Italians usurp Columbus Day as being like their national holiday, when really it was the Portuguese. Anyhow,
a mess.
Yeah, you know, but to be frankly honest with you, the reality is that it's a very nice situation for the media to actually pay attention to something like that, because they are the real people, the average people, the majority people.
These families are they've been, you know.
They're screwed.
I watched it all day. I watched it last night.
Mark, I have to apologize. I really do. I really have to apologize. You know what a progressive I am? I didn't pay attention. I don't even know what's going on, but I can guess. I really can. Because and anybody who works at, you know, Stop and Shop, anybody who works in you know, the lumber yard, anybody who works, anybody like yourself who, you know, who makes a decent living but whatever, has to break their butt, any one of them is one of them. And the fact of the matter is that they're not going to, you know, it's like, oh, they're saving. Who's saving them? And that's my question. My first question is, which part of Chile is saving them? Is it like the wealthiest 1% that exploits them? Or is it the people that are community?
Well, what's funny is that, well, at least Fox is portraying, I don't know if it's going to be the party line, but the backbone of the Chilean government is this mining operation, the gold and copper mine. So the fact that there was, you know, the earthquake and the mine collapsed, whatever. And they got these guys out alive using all the government resources, you know, American technology and the Chilean engineers and all. It's like us pulling the Apollo back from the moon that time, you know, that kind of thing. They saved the government, you know, baby by getting these guys out alive. And then the guy that Luis guy that just came out of the hole here, the last guy out, Rizua, is like a freaking, he's like MacGyver. The stuff
well,
he pulled down there.
Perhaps that working stiff, if there's any justice in the world, will actually run for El Presidente and actually bring democracy to the country completely and actually give the citizens, you know, a better shot at things and you know, to avoid the outside influences of such a great nation as ours that actually enjoys exploiting workers around the world. You know, by their so-called U.S. corporations, it's hilarious when people say, "Well, you got to buy American when you buy, you know, a General Motors car, and it's made in Mexico." Am I buying American? Am I?
Well, I didn't know we were going to go into the bash America theme, but that's okay.
No. I'm sorry. I apologize about that. I'm not really trying to go into the bash America theme because I, you know, you
well,
know me.
If you want, I would. But that's okay.
Okay. Please, by all means.
I have an Alex Jones clip to play. Why don't we share that as we're on the air tonight? I think that's a good way to go, seeing as it is that time of the night for the swine fear news.
Just be careful.
Hold on
with
the theme for that.
Son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a gun. You thought I was going to say son of a bitch, didn't you?
I got even a better one for you. His name is
Raymond. No, let's play the clip first here. This is vaccine death cover-up implodes worldwide. Da-da-da-da-da. Love this guy. Infowars.com. It's basically Sam Kinison reincarnated. This guy
says we went public last year with millions of other truth tellers and pointed out that the vaccine insert for the H1N1 flu shot admitted that it could cause neurological disorders, Guillain-Barre's, you name it, and people actually went out and read the vaccine insert instead of believing the corporate media paid off by Big Pharma to lie to you. Since then, the head of the EU Commission, Wolfgang Wudarg, medical doctor, has come out and said that they found all the evidence showing that vaccine makers had paid off politicians in Europe and the United States to hype this dangerous vaccine and that it had serious health ramifications. The British Medical Journal has come out with a major report. I've interviewed the editor of the journal saying, yes, you know, clearly this was hype to sell vaccines. Since then, the British government has had to suspend giving the H1N1 shot to under 5-year-olds, admitting that it caused a tenfold increase in violent convulsions in children. The government of Finland has come out and said it's causing all sorts of neurological disorders, like narcolepsy. All over the world, people are waking up. Also, last year, we saw a record low numbers of people taking the regular seasonal shot and the H1N1. So now they're combining both the shots together. And because we had record low numbers of people taking the vaccines worldwide, we had a record low flu season, because the real studies show that it's the flu vaccine in most cases that's causing the flu. You've seen the anecdotal evidence of your friends and family or yourself saying, yeah, I never got the flu until I took the flu shot. It almost killed.
Now, there you go. There's a little American medical, you know, it just cracks me up. Where are you at, Tom?
I'm sorry?
What do you think of that?
My hearing is so shot. Explain
the
that again.
Flu spreads where the flu vaccine is. No flu vaccine, no flu.
Well, I mean, we're not talking about the days of Jonas Salk, where he actually
did.
We're talking about dishonorable people, not good people.
Yeah.
Polio
vaccines, another one of their farces. See, what gets me about all this stuff with vaccines, every year. I mean, that's why the whole show tonight is all about this digital nostalgia. We keep going backwards to go forwards. Is that we somehow think that we can outsmart nature instead of being as smart as nature would be the goal. Nature
Mark, can I ask you
stick around.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can I ask you a serious question before you go on to your show? You understand, I mean, I remember the thing that was hanging out about child autism. Well, let's talk about mercury poisoning. I mean, seriously, that's part of most of the preservative is a mercury. If I'm not wrong, if I'm
well,
correct.
Well, look at the thimerosal thing is like another one of these tempests in a teapot. The point is that in order for vaccines to stay on the shelf, they put a whole bunch of preservatives in those things. That are much more about the shelf life of the shot than it is the benefit of the recipient of the shot. And the thimerosal is one of many of the things that could cause unpredictable responses from an ever more fragile immune resistance that comes out. Every generation, it seems to me, is sicker, epigenetically sicker. So we keep loading them up. last 20 years... whole thing spiked. They say it's because we're testing closer. No, we're scrambling brains faster. That's all.
That's what I'm thinking,
too.
Antibiotics are like it's like all you have to do is walk into a doctor's office with a sniffle, and they'll just hand you one of them, and it could be one of the most dangerous ones. I mean, you see my fingernail fungus. I mean, that did not...
Thank you. Look, thanks for the image. The whole point is your fingernail fungus.
It's the truth.
9:21 on the show. Norman Goldman coming up next. the whole point is what we're trying to say is that we continually have this fight the fungus, fight the symptoms, fight the flu, and the organisms laugh at us because all we're doing is giving them basically like chumming for a shark. We just keep giving them more ammo to come back stronger and better, and we're weaker.
It's sad, too.
Well,
it really is.
And that's why Alex Jones is a nutball, and I'm horse, and you got fungus in your fingernails.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you got to watch out.
Yeah. and that's why we're all falling apart, and the ones that are exploiting us are sitting on their back right now, with a $300 in their
lap. We will not only you have to understand something. I am a fighter, and I told you about the book I'm trying to write. And we will actually conquer them and win. It shall happen.
Well, we might not live to see it, but the battle will push it on, and
at least we'll
seven
try.
Seven cousins down the line, they'll get something done.
We'll try. for the family, that's all that matters.
Well, fight on, Eco.
You love you, brother.
Take care.
Whoop, you know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masters.
That decoration, man. Just the decoration.
All right. So let's see. Let's shift some gears here. I need another break. So let's see. I'm trying to save my damn voice in case I have to do an interview here in a minute. Let's see if I can. Oh, I know. I could curse the god that gave me the sore throat.
Bruce? I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee!
Is that your final answer?
Our service has
God! Bing, 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 bing! Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse. Oh, and by the way, you suck!
Okay, I'm back. That wasn't fast enough. I'm still doing something here. Anyway. So... just a little taste there from Alex about, the swine flu vaccine, which is now literally useless. As we've reported here, 60% of the country is naturally immune to it, most of them being seniors. Not a threat. There's no pandemic. And they're sticking people left and right. Anyone that lines up to be a hot lunch, you get what you get. Chilean president is on talking about... the miners here. Let's see if we can get some of this.
The faith, the commitment, the loyalty, what the Chileans showed these 69 days, it fills us with pride. I'm happy that God was with us, and I have the feeling, and I want to tell you, that Chile is ready to confront great things. We are ready to any challenge that the future should give us. And I can only say, long live Chile. Damn it.
Say damn it.
Sometimes emotions are going inwards, and one feels them and can't be expressed. But when I saw the face of Luis Ursula, the last miner, when he came out from the depths of earth, I was so excited and so emotional. And I want to tell all Chileans that I am so proud, and I am so privileged to be a president of all the Chileans. Sometimes celebrations, right now, all over the Chilean squares, everybody is celebrating, but right now we are celebrating in the heart of all the Chileans. I heard that all the bells in the entire Chile, all the church bells, all the way until Luis Ursula, the last miner, came up. We said the first day, this is not going to stay like that. The ones that are responsible, they will have to assume and confront the responsibility for our government and for the whole entire Chile. We have to better the systems, our attitudes, the processes to protect better the life and dignity of our workers. And not only in the mining field.
He's kind of conversational for a historic moment. He seems to be rambling, and, as us egos do. Sorry about that. As I wet my whistle here, see if I can get my voice back. If I go a little deeper now. In case you're tuning in late, this is Summer Time. I'm Dr. Mark. The number to call is, as you just saw with Mr. Tom there, is 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. We're hoping that we have a guest on in a couple of minutes. Don't know if she's going to make it or not. She's down in D.C., I think, leading a platoon of digitized monsters in some form of database exercises that are clandestine at this point. And we'll be talking Hell 2.0 with her. If not, we will be fishing around for other voices other than my scratchy one to fill the air tonight. So, getting back to what I was mentioning before, Tom called. This whole idea that we're going backwards, they go forwards. When you look around, you see this happen tonight. This is a great event. It's amazing they saved these people. I mean, it really is. The technology, they think they said this morning, it's only been used twice. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's space age stuff. It's amazing stuff. And yet, the core emotions are, you know, primordial. Family. You see little kids. You see, you know, couples reunited, all kinds of crap going on. It's universal. You can't look at that and not be happy. It's just that look around it. Golden copper mine. That's the backbone of the economy. They're still in mines. We're still digging for precious metals. We're still mining with humans. You know, just like those ones in West Virginia, those guys didn't make it out. You know. You just wonder. We have so many broken systems. We've talked about healthcare a lot, economy a lot, government a lot, military a lot. What isn't broken? Even religion, philosophy, all of it. And you just don't know how much of the old stuff has to be around as the new stuff comes in, and we're kind of in that, you know, that connecting flight right now, trying to figure out, you know, are we going to really change our core values as a society and move more into the realm of what we saw in the Social Network movie and what we're seeing happen with the Brett Favre situation and dozens of other scandals that are digitally TMZ'd to death, literally beyond death, like in Michael Jackson's case. You know, where what used to be tabloid, what used to be looked at as dismissive, is frontline news, constantly, rumors, innuendos, throw anything at the wall, and it doesn't matter if you can substantiate it because it sticks in the clouds. That Social Network movie proved the principle. You know, you send someone an angry letter, okay, a couple hundred people might know about it. You make an angry blog post or something else, you know, Facebook post, a tweet, it's gone. It's like a balloon. Let it go in the sky. Gone. Never see it again. Can't get it back. And this digital identity that that every one of us is building, this footprint we're building up there, is getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And it presses down on us on the ground here, this analog life we're living here, this life that ends down here. And that's going to be our legacy, not what we do down here. We could be the nicest, kindest, most open-hearted person in the world, have one bad tweet. That's it. You're an SOB forever. So nobody's ever going to be perfect because the judgment is not going to come from God. It's going to come from a mouse. Think about that one. I seem to have more of a voice when I yell. It's like Regis right now. I don't know. All right. 9:32. I need to dance. You need to listen. Here we go. Sleep makes Flippy grumpy. Ah. haven't even gotten to the cocoa yet. All right, let's see. We go down this way. One of the disasters that we endured, you know, a number of years ago as a country, and touched me personally a little bit, was Katrina. Happened 5 years ago this summer, in fact. And one of the things I did with the digital media back then, before there was even, is when blogs were popular. Best thing you do is have a blog. And I made one called The Internal Optimist, .blogspot.com. And on it, I put attitude adjustments, things you could listen to for a minute or two, that were really designed to reach the relief workers down in Katrina, figuring that, you know, they had crazy hours and they had just tremendous social stress, let alone the physical and everything else going on. And I figured a lot of people are going to be helped out just by someone up here, you know, thousands of miles away, you know, sort of talking straight to them. So I would sit down pretty much every night, for nights and nights over a year, I guess it was almost a year. I did it Monday to Friday, and I would give them these little attitude adjustments, and it was really popular. It was weird. You know, I never met these people, but it looked back 5 years ago, it's like, there's a lot of them here that, that I kind of just, you know, I wish that that would have continued, you know. Let's listen to one. Let's see. Number 337. Difficulty. And I'm there. And maybe we'll have a guest on the other side of this, but maybe not. We have more attitude adjustments to go then.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark with attitude adjustment number 337. And today I want to talk to you about difficulty. You know, the phrase take it easy is popular for a reason. Most people take it tough. And when you're dealing with difficulty, and sometimes it's unavoidable, sometimes you got to have that conversation or you got to have that moment in your life where you're going through a crisis. Not that you did anything to attract it or that there's something wrong with you because you're going through some stuff. Difficulty has to do with a very simple principle of attitude adjustment called, is this live or is it Memorex? Since most of the stuff that we experience is shuffled memory. A lot of times, difficulty has to do with the fact that we weren't attending the first time. So when the lesson comes back to us, we're equally stupefied, and it so becomes something that, you know, difficult, damn it, to process. And so we sit there and we go, oh, my God, this seems familiar, yet I also feel just as bewildered as I did the first time. And so difficulty becomes much more about understanding how we internalize our experiences, how we remember things, how we recall them to the surface, and then what we do with them when they get there. It's got nothing to do with the intensity or the duration or the frequency of the issue at hand. So it doesn't matter if you're going through prolonged illness or you're going through a trauma that happened. Well, it doesn't matter. Time doesn't matter, and the heat that comes out of it doesn't really matter. It's just really a function of what your pattern's been with that type of experience and understanding that pattern. And then once you understand that pattern, then you could take the novel approach to getting through it rather than taking the tried and true one, which always brings you back to the same point. So it really is saying difficulty is a function of how willing are you to have a different response to the same experience. That's really all it comes down to. If you're not willing, the degree of difficulty gets even more and more involved. So that's why I think a lot of times change work is backwards, is people are trying to take the same strategy to different circumstances instead of saying take similar strategies out the door and let all your circumstances come from that standpoint of they're all novel. They're all happening in the now. So that way they're not based on what went before, what's going to come next. And that way you function in the here and now, and you have much more of a presence with yourself rather than trying to constantly match up what was historically true for you or what is desired for you in the future, and really kind of own that that bridge in the middle. So see if that's a good way for you to get through the midweek, and we'll talk to you again real soon. This is Dr. Mark for the Internal Optimist at blogspot.com. Thank you once again for this time and your space. Be yourself and be well.
You know, my voice wasn't that much better 5 years ago. Anyway, there I was rambling to the darkness, to basically, you know, pack of strangers. But I'd like to think that if somebody heard that, that's having a rough time, 100 years from now, or let's go 100, maybe 20, that might perk them up. That might, you know, pull them away from the ledge a little bit. Because really, we don't get a lot of encouraging words. I mean, this event tonight is going to be picked apart, you know, a zillion different ways this Sunday. Right now, they got this Mark Siegel guy. Let's see what they're doing here.
That have been able to do that. But, Sean, this is the medicine of the future in any case. Being able to monitor people from 2,000 feet up, and look how they walk out. We were expecting them to be in much worse shape. Now, there are still many unanswered medical questions here. The exposure to methane gas, carbon monoxide gas. Some of them might have had heart problems. There's a patient, a minor down there that had kidney problems, diabetes, plenty of high blood pressure that goes around. We don't know how this is going to pan out with the stress as they reacclimate to society. That still remains to be answered.
We discussed it.
Tremendous. Diabetes, kidney disease, heart disease. But they're fine. Everybody's fine. And it's not that's the exposure in the mind isn't going to kill them. It's life outside the mind. I can't stand the medical profession. I'm sorry. I can't stand you. Can't stand you. Oh, uh-oh. Medical contributor. Sinara, whoever.
There's a chance that they'll come out of this emotionally and mentally very, very well. You know, minors have a very special strength anyway, a mental strength, to be able to go down to those mines and
really?
For, you know, 24 hours at a time or even 12 hours at a time to go down to small, dark places. Deal with the stress. You know, my dad works on the mines in Zimbabwe as a young person. He speaks about that to me all the time and says, you know, this is a real struggle for them. But it's for the rest of us to do this. For them, it's okay to do it. But you know, they also had a tremendous amount of communication with their families as well, and with the outside world. And that certainly lessens the degree of separation anxiety.
But the teamwork here is unbelievable. That they all bonded together and they had certain roles. One was the poet, one was the psychologist, the other was driving the truck.
One was a pastor, one was a preacher. You know, I got to, by the way, I understand that we now have, I guess, one of the paramedics and medics and those that were risking their life to go down there, as you can see in the video, and I don't have the best eyes. Apparently, they're now beginning the effort of bringing those guys up. We have four more people that have to get up, and then the full celebration will ensue. But back to the medical question here, you know, the idea that they thought of the aspirin, the idea that NASA donated, in fact, that high-calorie drink for them so that it would at least reduce the chances that they would vomit on the way up, the fact that they were thinking about all of these medical issues, light, communication, preventing panic attack, claustrophobia, pretty detailed.
They even got a company that actually made a vital sign monitor, a belt, that they wore on the way up so they could see exactly how they're going. And that drink you mentioned is really incredible because it was a high-calorie drink for people under stress that helped them get to the top.
All right, Mark.
You know, this is going to become an allopathic, you know, parade. These guys got stuck down there. They suffered. They survived. And the line of allopathic credit is going to be doled out. They did a great job, you know. This is crisis care. This is what they're good at. The thing is that when they try to attack lifestyle or seasonal flu or something a little more systemic than being stuck down, you know, a mine shaft, they fail miserably, and they never look at that, you know. I feel like listening to a little more of Alex Jones, since the allopaths are having a little party on my behalf tonight. Oh, come on. You know, I'm going to try and get my voice off the air a little more. Another raspy voice talk, let's see. I'm fighting it. I'll tell you what, I sound much better when I yell. But let me talk to this guy all the time. Back to vaccine death cover-up. Yeah, I got Alex Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the Innovations documents, the Rockefeller Foundation documents from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and right through. They developed vaccines for flu or tetanus, where they add chemicals and hormones that reduce your fertility or sterilize you. They admit they're doing this. So it's not that there couldn't be a clean, safe vaccine developed. I'm not arguing about that science. The point is they've been caught spiking vaccines all over the world as part of these United Nations World Health Organization programs for covert sterilization, and we even have the Rockefeller Foundation documents. This is even mainstream news now. But on top of all of that, 90-plus percent of the vaccines that we're using here in the United States and Europe are made in China. China was a signatory to the one-child policy. They were a signatory to the United Nations agreements to use food and medicine as weapons to forcibly reduce their population. They're the folks that give you melamine-tainted milk and bisphenol A-coated plastics. I mean, this is a nightmare situation. So the globalists have contracted with these dehumanizing tyrants to produce not just our vaccines, but most of our medicines. This is so horrifying, and I know it's hard for people be able to admit this to themselves. So if you'll just go research the facts, it's all there. And the good news is record numbers of people are refusing to take the vaccines, and record numbers of people are reading the literature and finding out how deadly this is, and government after government after government, from England to Australia, from Finland to India, is having to totally suspend or restrict giving these shots because people now understand how dangerous it is because there's such a wide swath of death and destruction in its wake. We're starting to win. We're starting to have an effect. And that's why the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has given money to Monsanto and others to come up with pharmacological crops that grow the vaccine inside of the food so there's no way for you to escape it. That's why Bill Gates is looking at releasing genetically engineered mosquitoes to, quote, inoculate you.
There's new drug discovery going on. Our foundation is backed a vaccine that's going into phase 3 trial that starts in a couple months.
Literally releasing bugs that come out and inject you with these things. They're not playing games. They want to force you to go under this eugenic system. Every time the global elite meet and they set up these philanthropic organizations, all they talk about is population control. This is what they're obsessed with. They don't like going to the Grand Canyon and seeing big crowds. They want all the science and technology for themselves, not for the general population. It's the ultimate form of greed and envy and control. It's a scorched earth policy of total monopoly over humanity. You are being slowly killed. Cancers are off the charts. Every other form of degenerative disease is off the charts. And they know that the vaccines, the sodium fluoride, the bisphenol A, and all of these chemicals are doing it. And we have their own documents admitting it. So in closing, warn everyone you know. Send them the vaccine inserts. They're online where it says it can cause cancer, where it says it can cause neurological disorders, where it admits that it's even caused deaths. Send them all the mainstream news articles that we're going to link below where major governments are having to suspend the shots because it's causing so much carnage. And warn them that the regular seasonal flu shots this year are going to have this H1N1 and whatever else they're adding to it. Warn everyone you know. This is incredibly serious. Bayer Pharmaceutical admitted in court that for over a decade they knowingly sent out factor 8 blood product to hemophiliacs, knowing it was a death sentence of hepatitis and HIV. They did it cold-bloodedly as part of a eugenics program. The crimes of Big Pharma are legion, and they need to be prosecuted. They need to be brought to justice, but there's a revolving door between Big Pharma, GMO, and the government. Almost every major federal regulator, not just here, but in every other major country, is a former alumni of these companies who own stock. And then they leave the government and go back into those companies and move up that ladder of power for selling out their fellow humans. This is part of the eugenics agenda. And when you see car washes getting IRS visits over 4 cents of unpaid money,
I've had enough of Alex and his, I think I actually played part of that clip before. Anyway, Jesus, depressing. I might need another attitude adjustment, where I'm going. Anyway, we thought we'd have a guest tonight. I don't think we're going to have one now, because, you know, it's kind of like the way my day went. Kind of started off busy and then just kind of trailed off into nothingness. Well, my day just starts at midnight, so, like, you know, most people start work in the morning. I start work in the morning, but those people work the night. Anyway, we were hoping to get the Eliza people on tonight. They are doing the Olé Felipe. Olé Felipe! So they're not showing up. So I have some options. I could play their video, Battle 2.0, which is sunny and nice and gets everything going. But I kind of don't feel like doing that. Kind of don't feel like doing a lot of things. Tell you what. You know, like I said, I want to get back on this theme of being digitally forced to be nostalgic. Sunday night, when this whole ears, nose, and throat, chest, and ass thing started in my body as a result of my tooth extraction, my immune system went bonkers on me. Had a little garage sale. Everything must go. Sunday night, I watched, I think, two showings, because I kind of passed out in between them, of the HBO special. It's called The Promise, the Springsteen thing, about The Darkness on the Edge of Town album from 78. And all that went on in the background in his life that led up to it and how it really shaped his career. And when you think about the music industry, 1978, you think about that Facebook movie and the Napster guy and the way the pendulum swung back, you know, to the consumers and peer-to-peers and all that. And it just seems like every industry goes through this. I think the Internet is actually going through that now. The Internet's going through what every media goes through once it becomes the primary media. You know, when it was radio, you know, the sponsors held the cards. Television, same thing. The sponsors held the cards. And now it seems like that's happening with the technology. Because it's the techies that hold the cards, and they determine what we're going to pay attention to. So, in case you've noticed it, I put Rushkoff's book up there, Coercion, because it's about from 10 years ago when his model in the universe began to twist a little bit, because it was an idyllic phase with the Internet that didn't last, because we uploaded the corporate world, and we did it because this is such a lack of creativity when it comes to, as he calls it, using operating systems to distribute value. And we use the same one we've been using since the 1300s, which is a centralized currency crap. And because of that, you get the Alex Jones phenomenon of the world, because there's always going to be an inner circle that has most of the pie. That's what centralized is, the way they control it. It's what the monarchs, you know, wanted. So we suffer through that. And being able to decentralize and go to local currencies and go to things that are off their grid is really what is starting to emerge in some of these corners of the web. But you know, that's why you look at what happened to Springsteen 30 years ago, and you look at what goes on now, where the public is being exploited, almost abused, worse than what Springsteen was 30 years ago. Because at least he got something. He had a fight. At least he got something for his sweat and tears. What percentage of people are on Facebook or YouTube or any of these platforms that are pumping out with blogs? Like me, I've probably spent 6 years putting stuff on the web. It's supposed to be an electronic business card to then promote something else that someone would eventually buy. But because we got so used to the free content, newspapers are gone, zipping up all over the place. We don't need them anymore. We got so used to information being basically sort of WYSIWYG. Don't have to check it. Tabloid is the same as New York Times. New York Times, hey, we can't rely on them. This guy made up a story because he's competing with the guy that's making it up in his basement. So eliminate the difference. Who needs the New York Times? Waste of ink anyway. We're left with a lot of games of telephone going on up there. Where is reliable information anymore? And especially when it comes to Health 2.0 and healthcare and health information. When I reported last week that 80% of the population, including me, I had a sore throat the other day. I went on there wooing around, looking for something to get my voice back for the show, to give you people tonight, because I'm dedicated to a show every week. Even if I want to curl up and die. I don't even feel weak today. I just feel, like, depleted. Like I went from my week yesterday. I'm just depleted today. Tomorrow I'll be deficient. Because I need to be. My body's got to repair. I had a major surgery, really, moving a tooth. But it's like all that content up there for nothing. And there's no, once you have that established, you really kind of warp the world in a way, because if everyone's relying on information that they get from a friend of a friend of a friend, and there's really no way to, you know, stick a fork in it, we have to start relying on ourselves. And that means we have to know a lot more about what's going on within us than what's going on around us. Because what's going on around us is evasive and sort of like, in a way, invigorating, because you don't have to chase it. But everybody seems to. Everybody seems to chase these things. And Springsteen said something on that show that I need to clear my throat to do justice to it. I know there's a clip that has it, but I don't know. I'll go find it. See if I can find myself a... let's see. All right. Get a little Steinbrenner action because we got a little baseball before I get off the air.
Anyway, as I was lying in the puddle, I think I may have found a way for us to get Bonds and Griffey, and we wouldn't have to give up that much.
Well, don't tell it to me, George. Tell it to the new assistant of the general manager.
I didn't get the job.
Well, once you were dead, we couldn't just sit on our hands. We got to make a move. But you still have your old job. Of course, we'll have to dock you for the time you missed. We're running the ball club here. If I give special treatment to you, everyone will want it. Next thing you know, it's chaos. And I can tell you this. Chaos does not work for the New York Yankees. Not as long as I'm running the show.
Oh, they can't lose enough. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, with 80% of us up on the web trying to find health information, and it's all corporately organized. There's an agenda to it. That's what Rushkoff's getting through. In that coercion book, he's giving you the abstract version of the story. He's giving you the examples that have come up in the media. He's giving you the background of neuromarketing. He's giving you the sort of the theater of it. In his new book, Program or Reprogram, Rushkoff's giving you a fork in the eye. Hey, wake up, stupid. You're being completely taken over. Everybody thinks Facebook is their friend. Everybody thinks that the iPhone is just basically a walkie-talkie to the rest of the world, not a corporate ATM. Because what happens is the only ones that make money off of all these free and happy platforms, even Blog Talk here that I'm sitting here, you know, croning into, is the elite. That small circle again, because it's still a centralized system. The second we start to cleave off a little piece here, a little piece there, and make it peer-to-peer, make it an exchange of value,
they can't follow us because they don't add anything. All they do is build the monkey bars and put a fence around it and call it a park. And we come running in and go play on the monkey bars. So whether you're buying Bruce's 30-year-old B-sides that he's now going to, you know, romantically present to you on HBO and in movies, and isn't it great? Because I'm sure there were probably, oh, I don't know, 10,000 guys that thought they were Bruce Springsteen in 1978. But there's only one Bruce. But he said it. He said it during the show. That, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I'm too damn tired to look up the quote. He said something like, rather than rich, successful, or happy, or any of those things, famous, rich, famous, or happy. That was the three things, I guess. He just wanted to be great, which meant he knew, and this is something that only recording artists can really speak to. He knew that at some point the arc was going to end and his music was going to be closed parentheses. And he didn't want to just be popular or just be successful or just be, you know, fat and happy. I think of the band Boston, you know, three songs and they were gone. They came back as the Rings. And then they were booed off stage and they never heard from again. I think of those kinds of bands. Came and gone, you know, Kaja Goo Goo. Two, Sha Sha. I can't sing tonight. Anyway, get Malik over here, 10 o'clock hour. Bruce knew that he wanted to have a lifelong conversation with his fans. He was not thinking short term, maybe because he is Philo. He's thinking legacy all the time. He's thinking that this is going to stick, even if it's going to stick on vinyl. Who knew? Who knew he was going to be digitally remastering, revocalizing, singing back songs he made 30 years ago with the band then, his voice now. New CD coming out in November called The Promise. Amazing. Right? It's great that it happens, but they're still selling you old stuff packaged up in a new way. It's not so much creative as it is recreative, which is fine, because what's recreation? Play. That's all it is. It's all play. It's all pretend. It's all soap opera. It's all theater. We've invented an entire gossip industry around sports. Did the same thing around music and movies, politics, every aspect of life, even healthcare. Come on, the vaccine stuff, nothing but gossip. So that water cooler conversation that you used to have at a real water cooler, you now have it on Facebook. You now have it on Twitter. Big deal. We digitized that too. And guess what? Rather than it staying by the water cooler, it stays in the clouds. And keeps gossiping without us. So creating this big shadow that is either going to shed light or it's going to just continue to hang over us. It's up to us. So, you know, whether we're really interested in whether Jen Sturger and Brett Favre got together or Brett Favre really sent the pictures or not, or somebody just trying to make him look bad because he's a hateable guy. You know, who knows? Same thing with Springsteen. About a year and a half ago, somebody was saying that he broke up his marriage, or I don't know what the name of the woman was, insinuating he had an affair. It's like there's always someone trying to knock people down that are up, period. That's not going away. What is going away is that every swing and every miss is being recorded and perpetuated online. And somebody's going to profit off of it. Drunkdial.com, you know, whatever that gets called. I've got to ask my under 25 friends about that one. I forget what it's called. You know, they're all there. They're all there. It just, our mistakes that used to be part of being human are now being commoditized, are now being used as a raw material for another product. Because, like, that's what Jackass is. You know, the Jackass 3D movie. That's what almost all of the reality shows are. They get you over the edge. They point a camera at you. And they click send. Aha, gotcha. But you're done at that point, but they're not. Because they can take all those things and package them up and stick it in a DVD. They can take all those things and put all kinds of ads around it. They can put all those things and stick it on a platform that's gonna you know, network it with a whole bunch of other ones that are similar. They have a whole catalog of things. Because I'm not. On and on and on. All right, I need another attitude adjustment. How about you? Let's see. So I'm winding it down. We got the Chileans out of the mix. So, man, let's talk about victory. Number 334. December 28th, 2006, my birthday. How about that one? All right, we'll play this. Then I got a couple more items of business to do, and I am wrapping it up here on a raspy Philo night.
And today I want to talk to you about victory. You know, it's one of those things we confront almost every day in life. There's that sense of, or signs of, self-defeating behavior. What is self-victorious behavior? I always wanted to know that because it always seems like victory is fleeting and defeat is permanent. You know, you win something and they go, well, then you got to win again next year, coach. You know, you just feel like a lot of the games that are set up in society are set up to lose. Give you an example, baseball players that go to the Hall of Fame that are remembered for all immortality fail. 7 out of 10 times. They're a 300 hitter. 300, you know, 30% of the time they succeed. They're so good that they remember forever. But if they only do it 2 times out of 10, they're barely in the league. So, victory. What is the attitude adjustment to make about victory? Is it ever final? Well, you have to look at it the way you would picture a waveform. Okay? You have the rising part of the wave, which is really the uphill battle. I always can see people when they're going into a new endeavor or any type of change work, they're facing an uphill battle, which is good. Because why climb? You know, why go forward if you're not going to go higher? You know, that's sort of the mindset I say. If you're on a flat land and you're not challenging yourself, you're just going through the motions and you're not really getting anything out of yourself. And so ultimately you get stale. So if you face an uphill battle in life, as long as it isn't a freaking Matterhorn, you're going to be okay. So there's the uphill battle. See, you go up and you hit a plateau, up and you hit a plateau, up and you hit a plateau, and then eventually you peak. Now, some people peak too early, and they get to the foothills, and they go, that's it. My nose is bleeding. My ears are popping. I can't go any higher than this. And they come screaming back down the mountain, usually the same direction that they came. So victory is when you go to the peak, and then you allow yourself to fall down the other side. It's no different than a roller coaster when it kind of cranks its way up to the peak and then whee, down the other side. There has to be a release. Victory is in the release of the uphill battle. Most people, when they are victorious, become hypervigilant, which means they sit on the peak and act like King Kong, King of the Hill, and they are threatened by anyone that comes along to claim their mountaintop. Instead of saying, I've done this one, I release it, and I go down the mountain, and I go into the valley again to pursue the next uphill battle. So there is no battle downhill. Downhill, you got nothing but peace. So that's one of the reasons why, in terms of the four domains, Philos are constantly in drama, because they're constantly in a mindset of uphill battle. They never get to the peak. So what happens to them is they get into self-defeat, they get into worst-case scenario, they get into, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, go back down the hill like Jack and Jill, I'm never going to peak, I'm never going to be a contender, you know, and all that stuff. And I'm saying lose that. And when you own the peak, when you have climb the mountain, and you're at the, and you've achieved a state of advantage. Advantage. You have a new vantage point. You are then free to let that go and go down the other side of the mountain where there is no battle. It's sort of like, you know, in skiing, they have all the trails, and then they have the bowls on the other side where all these ski instructors go. And that's where there is a freeing, there is a release, and that's where, like, in terms of the simples, that's where we rest during the eco week, right? Where there's empathy, and there's sort of a receiving of the battle-worn troops, and you come home, and there's a convalescence. And then you go into the trough, and you go into exile land, into the valley, and you then incubate and R&D and come back for the next one. That's life, guys. It ain't no flat street. So, see if you can handle victory on a daily basis. This is Dr. Mark with internaloptimist.blogspot.com. Thank you once again for this time and your space. Be yourself and be well.
Yeah, I'm liking me more and more. I'm sounding better at the end of the show. Anyway, I think I need some more prescription here.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
All right. So, I hope I made my point about that, about, you know, when you look at the direction that the digital age is taking us, technologically forward, but emotionally, it's making us into simpletons. It's making us into don't think, do not think at all. Thinking is against the freaking code because it disrupts the ride everybody's on, see? So you can chase Deadspin and TMZ. And I guess, you know, the harm, but it's a waste of a lot of, you know, kind of pure opportunity for something different. We're just regurgitating stuff. We're just taking what used to be sitting there next to the candy bar on the way outside the supermarket, and we're uploading it. And we're making it more important than it really was. Rumors. It's the alien baby. It's the same old garbage. And because of its digital omnipresence, because of the fact that no matter where Brett Favre goes these days, somebody is screaming horrible things at him. And you know what? If he actually did the things that are being insinuated, the karma is so vast that whatever's happening to him in his analog walking around life is that we're able to even see. Is a thimble in the the entire package that he's probably package that he's getting when he walks in the door. That's just poor. Just leave it there. 41-year-old grandfather. You know, I mean, to me, it is. I don't know. Is it Babe Ruth? Is it? You know, how far back you got to go? Ty Cobb. I mean, there's not an athlete that I've ever met, whether I was 6 or whether I was 36, that is 100% nature's nobleman. They're just not. And I don't know anyone that is really in any walk of life. They're just more visible. You know, the guy that works for the sanitation department could have as deep or dark a secret as by far, but no one cares. Nobody cares, unless he's a YouTube freak, you know, unless somebody mocks him somewhere else. You know, there's just like I said, it's becoming a very connected society that's also becoming a very neurotic one and attentive one that is constantly splitting and resplitting its attention and fragmenting its wholeness, and it's been the process. So as we get more connected, we can actually feel the energy coming from Chile tonight. These people getting out of the ground, which I think is an unbelievable great thing. That's like a little bubble on top of the froth that's going on all around us. Because yeah, you could flip channels and you could find death, disaster, mayhem, scandal, innuendo, gossip, rumor, blah, 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 anywhere else. Way more of that than there is pure human, you know, interest like that, where literally there's 33 families and I don't know how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of Chileans that are just bursting with pride and appreciation tonight. And I think everything I said, screw it all. I'm glad that that happened for those people. I'm sorry that, you know, they had to come through a disaster like this, because it really sucks that they had to go through that. I mean, when you read the details about what these guys suffered through, white men and women, I guess, it's all men, I guess, 33 minors, I think, it really was, you know, pretty much a man-made miracle on both ends. Made the mine, made the rescue, so... But we have to move on. I'm going to give you guys a little treat since my voice is so soothing to the nerves. I can't believe how bad I sound. It's unbelievable, really. Let's see. Maybe I could play it right off my Facebook feed. Probably could. Let's see. Probably the fastest way to do it. Maybe, I don't know. See, we'll find out, Mark. I just got to do it. We're coming out of the post-conference discussion on the COCO. I was hoping to get my Eliza Corporation guests on tonight, but they are evasive as hell. So I'm going to let those little doggies go and just leave them be. They obviously do not want to be on the air or make it even, you know, clear what they want to do. So I'll leave them be. If they want to be on, I guess they'll get a hold of me. Next week we get back to... real business at hand, serious October baseball as we move towards the World Series. So I'll get into that a little bit. Maybe we'll have Mike Silva on to give us another voice to talk about it with. I look at the transition that, you know, when we get to the end of the baseball playoffs as the, to me, the sort of the emotional end of the summer, you know, because we're in that kind of Indian summer point right now. So, all right, let's listen to what Rob Bryant had shared with us this afternoon that I think is kind of sums up where I'm at. I'm in some dimension, but it is not one that comes out clear on the radio. So here's a couple minutes of Rob, and then we'll wrap it up.
We start at a point. And this is a special edition of the Imagining the Tenth Dimension video blog. Not long ago, the amazingly energetic Dr. Mark Polifi of SomaSpace.org to attend the 2010 Coherence Conference, which took place at the University of Bridgeport in October. Unfortunately, my schedule didn't allow me to participate, but there were four basic questions Dr. Mark asked everyone to consider prior to the conference, and I'd like to share my responses with you now. This conference focused on the burgeoning field of Health 2.0 and brought together a wide range of speakers from various disciplines to discuss the importance of coherence as it relates to people's well-being. Since I'm not a health professional, I'm sure there would have been a lot of eye-opening discussions for me, but I'm also sure that my own approach would have added some new ideas to the discussion. I'm particularly interested in the idea that our reality is shifting as people become more and more connected to each other. Definitely a coherence-related concept. Here's the questions that Dr. Mark, as chair of the event, asked all participants to respond to. Question 1. Define coherence in your terms. Here's how I first learned about the concept of coherence. Our reality is constructed through constructive interference from a fifth-dimensional probability space, which contains a wave function which can be thought of as the constantly evolving map of possible pasts and futures that connect each of us to our current now. Those pasts and future paths are coherent with our current now, while the pasts and futures of the universe that are logically, causally incompatible are decoherent. Coherence, then, connects us to the multiverse as per Everett's many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. Speaking philosophically, coherence as a goal is finding ways for each of us to better connect to the preferred versions of the universe that already exist within the underlying patterns of timelessness, which, to avoid confusion with the multiple definitions of the word multiverse, I've come to prefer to refer to as the omniverse. My project, Imagining the Tenth Dimension, has been an ongoing exploration of how we fit into these underlying patterns. I recently posted a video to YouTube called Strength of Gravity, Speed of Light, which shows one example of how my project is about trying to find the common meeting ground between physics and philosophy, between science and spirituality. A recent blog entry which goes even further out on a limb with these ideas is called Love and Gravity. In that one, I look at what would more commonly be called New Age phrases and relate them to my approach to visualizing the extraspatial dimensions our reality comes from. Those phrases are, the universe loves you. Your body's natural inclination is to want to heal, to want to thrive. And there are forces outside of our reality which are trying to move us towards a better future. Question 2. What are the key applications of your definition? Understanding how each of us is at the center of our own unique version of the universe gives us a way of understanding our connectedness to the reality we are observing and our connectedness to others who are interacting with us as that reality is being observed. We each have more power than 20th century science has traditionally taught us to believe, and the new science of epigenetics is a prime example of that. Who would have believed 20 years ago that studies could prove that changes in diet, lifestyle, and attitude can change which genes are expressed and even influence which genes we pass on to our offspring? A YouTube video I posted last month called Placebos Becoming More Effective relates to this discussion. Question 3. What do you see as the major impact of your application within your field? I'm a generalist, interested in exploring the common meeting ground between ancient spirituality and modern science. I'm always careful to point out that I'm not a physicist, and I'm not pretending to be one. But my visual approach to understanding the 10 spatial dimensions that our reality comes from has fired the imaginations of millions of people around the world. By the way, I often get asked, aren't there really 11 dimensions? And I'm always careful to point out that those 11 dimensions in M-theory are 10 spatial dimensions plus one of time. And since I agree with the many physicists who say that ultimately time is an illusion, I prefer not to count that as a dimension. Question 4. What do you see as the major impact of your application outside your field? Outside my field? Well, for persons who insist that spirituality has no place in science, or religious fundamentalists who say that science is delusion, or hard determinists who say free will is an illusion, my project will not likely convince them to change the conclusions they've already reached. Other than that, it's difficult to pin down exactly what the phrase outside my field would mean, since the main goal of my project is to find ways to be as inclusive as possible in discussing where our reality comes from and the significance of our individual roles as participants in that process. For more about how my idea of our reality coming from a fifth-dimensional probability space is receiving more mainstream consideration this year, please watch my video for the Fifth Dimensional Camera Project. And as I always like to say, enjoy the journey. By the way, the next video we'll be looking at in this series is called Thinking Biggest, and I hope to see you then.
All right, there's Rob Bryanton checking in from Canada. Confusing. Define coherence as sort of a incoherence or a decoherence. Interesting stuff. Anyway, you can check them out at 10thdimension.com. Great stuff. Definitely thought-provoking and argumentative. Fun at parties. Can't get enough of that guy. Anyway, thanks for suffering through what was a tedious show for me and probably for you. I mean, covered a lot, though. Got the miners out and got the flu news out. Tom called in. It was nice. Thanks for that. Talked a little bruise. Talked a little bread. And just one more thing about the bread thing. It's not a story without the pictures of the penis. Can we be honest here? That's all it is. If all it was a bunch of voicemails or some texts, nobody cares. Because there was a dong shot, and one that doesn't reflect Brett in the most complimentary light. It's all anyone wants. to make someone powerful look weak. That's all it's about. You know, that's why I'm saying that digital shadow, that is such a, it's a primordial sort of visceral schaffenad, whatever that's called. What the heck they're called? Schadenfreude. I can't ever say it. The German's got to help me out. Schadenfreude. I don't know. I mean, it's revel in the suffering of others. Schadenfreude, whatever. Schadenfreude, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, that's what's rampant in the culture, because if we can't be powerful, then we could take power and really, you know, no one's taking his money away, no one's taking it. It's about damaging somebody's reputation. Politically, it's done all the time, routinely, and nobody cares. Entertainment industry, all the time. Lindsay Lohan, forget about it. Woman is Swiss cheese, but she'll get out of whatever she's in and make another movie, and we'll get in our car and drive over and pay $10 to see it. Because ultimately, we're kind of just resigned to that. We're kind of sheep. Those are the outlets we're given. We don't know how to create new holes in the top of the, you know, the bucket we're in to breathe here. So we take the default settings a lot, and that's why we're ultimately kind of doomed to repeat the same mistakes. That's why I'm saying at the top of the show that we got to break out of that. And I don't think the way out is through the clouds and the phones and all that stuff. I think it's really about going within first, knowing how you're designed, understanding the nature of that, the rhythm of that, and being able to communicate from your strengths rather than cover up your weaknesses. But that's me, Mr. Raspy. What do I know? So me and my mucus are going to go party, and I'm going to go stand on my head down. But before I go, just want to give you my picks, because I know everyone listens to this show for baseball picks here at 1027. I am going with, and this is completely based on, you know, hours and hours of tedious analysis. I'm taking Texas in six, and I'm rooting like hell for the Giants in seven. I tend to think I might get bit in the ass by one of those. So I just can't watch another Yankees-Phillies World Series. I will be so miserable in 2 weeks if I had to come on and do game one of the World Series with you guys and look at that crap again. It really could get ugly for like 3 weeks on the show. Right into Election Day. It's another high holy day here at summertime, as you know. So, with that said, I'd like to thank my guest, the voice known as Tom, Alex Jones by proxy, Rob Bryanton by proxy, Philippi from 2005. He's up there. And I don't know, anybody else like squeeze in there? So, I'm going to find myself a little song that I can kind of shout out to the miners down in Chile, all my friends at Fox News, and Larry King, everyone that contributed in the background today. Hope you enjoyed straining to hear it. I enjoyed straining to say it. It's been summertime. Thank you very much for this time and your space. Be yourself and be well, and remember to travel light through the darkness. Here we go. Let's see if this plays.
Are you sitting comfortable, two square on your body? Then we'll begin.
Great job getting those guys out. Really was. Tell us about it. Come on, XL, sing it. Get ready for Anto Week, my friends. The Anto Week of Regret.
Check out the Fantasy Physiology on summerspace.org. I'm liking it. Football and moon stuff. Kind of fun. Anyway.
I've been to Hollywood. I've been to Redwood. I crossed the ocean for a heart of gold. I've been in my mind. It's such a fine. Searching for a heart of gold, and I'm getting old.
All right, smile on, Sabian. I gotta take care of this voice.